So let's go on to the next presentation, which is where in the universe are we? Now that's a pretty silly question to ask, isn't it? Because everybody knows where we are. We inhabit a small sort of mediocre second-class planet called the Earth, which circles around a small to medium second-class star called the Sun, which circles around a sort of small second-class galaxy called the Milky Way, which is lost in the vastness of space like a grain of sand in the Sahara Desert. Now, the secular humanists like Carl Sagan love to say, even if there were a God, he'd never be able to find us. Well, that's the view today, but it wasn't always like that. There was a time when people believed that the Earth was the center of the universe and everything went round it. And people believed that simply by accepting the evidence of their own eyes. And this idea carried on until pretty recently, even after science was quite well developed. And one of the reasons why it kept on in society long after science grew up was that everyone accepted that this is what the Bible says the Earth is. It's at the center of the universe. For example, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. So on day one, we've got the earth. And it's not until day four that God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be signs and seasons, days and years. So this is only on day four that we've got the sun, the moon, and the stars. And then there appear to be verses in the Bible which specifically say the earth doesn't move. For example, Psalm 93, verse 1, the world also established that it cannot be moved, but there are verses which show that everything else does. The sun, for example, if we look at Psalm 19, in verse 6, it's talking about the sun. It says, his going forth is from the end of the heaven, and his circuit unto the ends of it. So there's the idea there that the sun, that the earth is the center and everything, the sun, the moon, the planets, the stars, go around it. But there was a problem with that picture that I showed you, the simple idea that the earth is in the middle and everything goes around in circles. And that problem was that it did not fit the astronomical observations. And the first person to really come up with a good solution to the observations was a man called Ptolemy, and he devised a modification to that in which the center of the universe is the Earth, and everything else moves around an epicenter, just a little bit away from the Earth. They move around in circles, but while they're going around in circles, they're also performing another circle. So they're going around in a sort of spiral. This is a very accurate way of determining planetary position. In fact, it is the most accurate way known. It's the way that astronomers do it today. They don't call it Ptolemy's method. They have made it into algebra instead of geometry. And now these epicycles are cosine terms in a Fourier series. But it's still the most accurate way of determining the planetary positions. Called Fourier analysis. Now that predicted very accurately everything the astronomers needed to know. When the telescope became available, it became clear that there were weaknesses in that method. But long before that happened, the Renaissance came to Europe. That was a rebirth in interest in the philosophy, the science, the mathematics of the ancient Greeks and the Romans. One of the people involved in that Renaissance was Nicholas Copernicus. Now, he was particularly interested in Plato. And Plato said that the sun is the embodiment of everything good and noble in the universe. And he was also interested in Pythagoras. Now, Pythagoras said the sun should be the center because he is the most magnificent of the gods. And one of Pythagoras' students, devised a system where the sun is the center of the universe and everything goes around it. And Copernicus, being a fan of Pythagoras and his pupils, he resurrected it and said he can get it to work with perfect circles and keeping constant speed. And everybody thought he meant this. He gave that impression. But when you actually get down to look at what he did say, and almost nobody did, he wrote this up in a book which was so badly written that only half of the copies printed were sold, and of those copies, almost none were read beyond chapter 1, because it was so badly written. But if you got any further than chapter 1, you realise that he had the centre of the universe, the centre of the Earth's orbit, and all the planets and the Earth had to do lots of epicycles. Mars had to do 5 of these epicycles. I've only drawn 2 there. But there were more than twice as many epicycles compared to Ptolemy's method. It was more difficult because there were more epicycles, and it was not as accurate. So it really wasn't at all a good, very good solution. We are generally told that as soon as Copernicus put forward the idea the sun was the centre, all the problems of astronomy were solved. It's not true. And all the Christians realized this was against the Bible. Martin Luther, for example, talked of that fellow who wishes to turn the whole of astronomy upside down, and then continued, "Even in these things which are thrown into disorder, I believe the Holy Scriptures." And so did everybody else. So Copernicus was ignored. Nobody bothered with Copernicus. They disregarded him on 2 points. His method is less accurate than Ptolemy, and it is against the Bible. So it would probably have fallen away into disrepute, but it was taken up by a very bright scientist called Galileo. Now, Galileo was very intelligent, very clever. He was an excellent debater. He loved making his opponents look fools, and he was good at doing it. And his research in dynamics convinced him that Aristotle's physics was all wrong. Now, all the universities were teaching Aristotle's physics. So all the professors were fighting against him, and he used to debate against them and make them look very foolish. And he wanted a way to thoroughly discredit Aristotle. And as soon as he saw Copernicus's model, he said, "Aha, this is just what I need." Because Aristotle had covered not only physics and biology and music and literature and oratory and every other field, he'd also covered astronomy. And he had in his astronomy the universe being carried around in crystal spheres, the Earth at the middle and the other planets and the sun and the stars on crystal spheres moving around the Earth. And Galileo realized that this system completely wipes out Aristotle's crystal spheres. So he said, "This is it. This disproves Aristotle, so I'll go along with it." And he knew perfectly well that it was anti-scriptural. And he said, "In questions concerning the natural sciences, Holy Writ must occupy the last place." In other words, when it comes to matters of science, the scientists, like me, know what we are talking about, and the Bible doesn't. Well, not surprisingly, he got in trouble with the Roman Catholic Church. There's a story which he's never told about that, but there isn't time to look at it. And one gets the impression that before the court, he was required to justify Copernicus against Ptolemy. It's not true, because he was required to show that Copernicus was superior to the model put forward by Tycho Brahe. Now, Brahe was one of the greatest observation astronomers that ever lived. He spent his entire career building very accurate equipment to observe the stars, and he took observations of the sun, the moon, the planets, the stars, the most accurate observations by far that had ever been taken. And he came to the conclusion that the universe is like this. He said, the Earth is stationary at the center of the universe. Two reasons for believing that. First of all, the Bible says so. Secondly, my observations show that is where it is. The moon and the sun move around the Earth. Two reasons for believing that. First of all, the Bible says so. Secondly, my observations show that it's true. But everything else moves around the sun. Everything else moves around the sun and is carried around the Earth in the same way that the moons of Jupiter are carried around the sun. Now that's quite a complex system. It's one I'm sure you've never seen before. As far as I know, it is the only model of the universe which has never been refuted. Every other model of the universe I have ever seen has been shown to be false. This, as far as I know, has never been shown to be false. So just going over it once more, the Earth stationary at the center, the Moon and the Sun going around the Earth, and everything else going around the Sun and being carried around with it. Now, Brahe died before he could finish writing up his observations, and his observations were taken over by his pupil, his assistant, Johannes Kepler. Now, Kepler spent years analysing his data and showed that the planets move around the Sun not in circles, but in ellipses. Now, that idea received a tremendous boost when the greatest scientist of all time, Isaac Newton, did his analysis. He came up with his theory of gravity, and he was then able to do a lot of calculations. And he said, if we imagine that we can isolate two bodies from the universe, of course you can't do that. This is pure theory. If you could, and if then they moved just due to the influence of the gravity between them, how would they move? And he showed that they would move, their relative positions would be given by assuming one stationary, it doesn't matter whether you take the bigger or the smaller stationary. It's conventional to take the bigger, but it's exactly the same as the smaller. And you work out how the other would move around it just due to the gravity between them. Now that's not what would really happen. What would really happen is that both of them would move around the common centre of gravity. Now that has much more difficult equations. But the relative positions are given exactly the same. You get relative positions from Newton's work and nothing else. But it's interesting to notice that the real situation is not described by the easiest equations, and the easiest equations do not apply to the real situation. Now, if you've got more than two bodies, it does not matter to if you choose any of them as stationary. It doesn't make it easier. The easiest equations are if you take the center of gravity of the whole system and then you work out the orbits of all of them around it. It is generally believed nowadays that the Sun is part of a galaxy called the Milky Way, which is supposed to look like something like this. It's believed that the Sun is something like a third of the way out of the middle, and the Earth is hurtling around the Sun at 100,000 kilometers an hour, and the Sun is hurtling around this at more than 1,000,000 kilometers an hour. If you want to consider this galaxy, the easiest equations occur if you take the center of gravity of the galaxy as stationary. But now it's thought that our galaxy is just part of a group called the local cluster, and this galaxy is hurtling around that many millions of kilometers an hour. And if you want to consider the dynamics of that whole cluster, the easiest equations are if you take the centre of gravity of that cluster of CFU. So what we consider stationary depends on how much of the universe we're looking at. But what if we want to consider the whole universe, everything, the whole creation? Would it now be sensible or reasonable to think there might be some place which really is, in an absolute sense, actually stationary and everything moves around it? And if it is reasonable to think of such a place, what about the possibility that the Earth might be there? Has anybody had any observation which shows that cannot be true? Well, Ernst Mach was one of the greatest scientists of the 19th century. He said, obviously it matters little if we think of the Earth as turning about on its axis, or if we view it at rest while the fixed stars revolve around it. Geometrically, these are exactly the same case of a relative rotation of the Earth and the fixed stars with respect to one another. So here we've got one of the greatest scientists of the 19th century with no objection to the possibility the Earth could be the centre. Fred Hoyle was one of the greatest scientists of the last century, and he said, we know that the difference between a heliocentric theory, a theory with the Sun at the centre, and a geocentric theory, one with the Earth at the centre, is one of relative motion only, and that such a difference has no physical significance. So we've really got no objection to the possibility that the Earth could be exactly where the Bible says, stationary at the centre. Well, has anybody ever put forward any observations that can disprove it? Well, there have been lots of ideas put forward claiming to be able to prove it. We haven't got time to look at more than one, but they all follow the same pattern. Let's look at the aberration of starlight. Well, you might say, what's the aberration of starlight? It's an effect which was discovered by the then British Astronomer Royal James Bradley. He pointed his telescope at a star. The star was actually called Gamma Draconis, and he observed it throughout the year, and he found that it was never in its average position. It appeared to move around the average position in a little ellipse. Now, that ellipse is actually very, very tiny, but it is definitely there. And he pondered about this, and he said, but how on earth do we have it like this? And after a while, he said, this is proof that the Earth goes round the Sun. Now, lots of people had believed that the Earth goes round the Sun, but they'd never had any proof. And he said, here at last, I have the proof. And the reason why this proves it is that we've got a telescope, and it's pointing straight at the average position, which is where the star really is. And light comes from that star, and it lands right in the middle of the objective lens. But as it moves down through this telescope, it takes a bit of time to get from the top to the bottom. Light moves very quickly, but it still takes some time. And the Earth is moving around the Sun at 100,000 kilometers an hour. So by the time the light that came in right at the middle, at the top, reaches the bottom, it's been left behind a little bit. And the Earth goes around the Sun in an ellipse, so the light gets left behind in an little ellipse, and that's why it's an ellipse. Here we've got proof that the Earth goes around the Sun. But there were still people who had come across Brahe's model. They still knew about Brahe's model, and they said, but wait a minute. What if Brahe was right? What if the Earth is stationary, and everything is going around with the Sun, then you would see an ellipse because everything is really forming an ellipse in the sky. And people said, yes, maybe this isn't proof after all that the Earth goes around the Sun. And then an Italian scientist called Ruggero Boscovich said, we can prove it. All we have to do is fill a telescope with water and observe now, because light travels 1.5 times more slowly in water than in air. It will take 1.5 times longer to get the bottom. The Earth will have moved 1.5 times further, so the ellipse will be 1.5 times bigger. And everybody said, oh yes, so it will. But everybody said, well, it's not worth filling a telescope with water to prove it, because, well, we all know the Earth goes round the sun. So nobody did the experiment until a scientist called Arago did some experiments in which he put a plate of glass on his telescope, and he found that when he moved the plate of glass, the image of the star moved with it. He also did experiments with prisms, and he could explain all his experiments if the Earth is stationary, but he could not explain any of them if the Earth moves. So the then British Astronomer Royal, George Biddell Airy, said, well, maybe we'd better fill a telescope with water after all. Now, remember, everybody had agreed, if the Earth is moving, then this will be 1.5 times bigger. But of course, if it's the stars that are doing the circuit in the sky, it won't make any difference at all. It's not the time it takes for light to come down at all. It's the fact that they are actually moving. So everybody agreed, if the ellipse is the same size, it means the Earth's stationary, the stars are moving. If it's 1.5 times bigger, it means the Earth's moving. What did they find? It was the same size. They had just proved the Earth is stationary. But scientists don't always accept observations. They are very good at making up what are called ad hoc theories. Now, to give you an idea of what an ad hoc theory is, supposing we've got a scientist who has a theory that all light sources must be yellow. He looks out and he sees green light. Does he have to abandon his theory that all light sources are yellow? No, he can say something has happened to the light on the way. It might have gone through a plate of coloured glass. So, although it started off yellow, I now see it as green. That's called an ad hoc theory. Well, the ad hoc theory that was put forward was that as the Earth moves through the ether, the fabric of space, the Earth must drag the ether along with it, partially, just the right amount to make that ellipse the same size. And everybody breathed a sigh of relief and said, ah, yes, the Earth is still moving. But then along came James Clerk Maxwell, and he unraveled the mysteries of electricity and magnetism, and he showed that electricity, that light, is an electromagnetic phenomenon. It has energy in electric form, which switches backward and forwards from magnetic to electric. And the speed at which it switches backwards and forwards, and therefore progresses through space, depends only on the properties of the ether, the fabric of space. And if the ether is constant, the speed of light is constant through it. So this gives us a means of measuring the speed of the Earth through space. Because if the Earth is moving with a speed v, and it bolts into light, it will hit that light, the impact speed will be c plus v. But if light is chasing the Earth and catching up, the impact speed will be c minus v. And of course, c plus b is greater than c is greater than c minus v. So all you have to do is measure the impact speed of light against the Earth. Well, that was done by one of the experimental geniuses of science, Michelson. And here he was working with a colleague called Morley, and they built an apparatus called an interferometer. We haven't time to look into it, but this works on the principle that when light strikes a diffraction grating, the spacing of the fringes that are formed depend on the speed that the light is hitting the grating. So that in the direction that the Earth is going, we ought to find fringes closer together, and in the direction away from where the Earth is going, they should be further apart. So, everybody expected, what they'll do is they'll turn the apparatus until it's pointing in the direction the Earth is going, we'll get a fringe shift, the direction for the maximum fringe is shift is the direction the Earth is going, the size of this fringe shift is a measure of the speed of the Earth through space. That's what everybody expected. They did the experiment and found no fringe shift. Well, they scratched their heads and said, well, it must just be that the Earth is going around the Sun at just the same rate that the Sun is going around the universe, and the two movements are just cancelled out. But if we come back in 6 months' time, the Earth will be going around the other side, travelling the same as the Sun through space. Now we'll get a nice big fringe shift. So they observed 6 months later, still no fringe shift. Other people did the experiment. They did it in Chicago, they did it in Berlin, they did it on tops of mountains, all over the place. All times of the day and night, all seasons of the year, and always no fringe shift. Interesting to see what the scientific community said about this. Adolf Baker, for example, failure to observe different speeds of light at different times of the year suggested that the Earth must be at rest. It was therefore the preferred frame for measuring absolute motion in space. But this implies, and this is Giancoli in Physics Principles and Applications, but this implies that the Earth is somehow a preferred object. Only with respect to the Earth would the speed of light be seen as predicted by Maxwell's equations. This is tantamount to assuming that the Earth is the central body of the universe. And Bernard Jaffe said the data were almost unbelievable. There was only one other possible conclusion to draw, that the Earth was at rest. This, of course, was preposterous. And since it disagrees with the theories, then one has to look for another ad hoc theory. Well, the ad hoc theory that was devised was put forward by an Irish physicist called Fitzgerald, and his idea was, as a body moves through the ether, the pressure of the ether against it makes it get shorter. And because the arm of the interferometer going into the ether had got shortened, that is why the fringe shift didn't develop, because, well, that's why there's no fringe shift. Now, this idea was developed by a very brilliant Dutch physicist called Anton Lorentz, and he developed it further so that not only do objects get shorter as they speed through the ether, but clocks also slow down. And everyone was very happy with this theory. Anton Lorentz called it the theory of relativity. Everybody was happy because lots and lots of experiments had been done, and they all showed the Earth stationary at the center. But using this theory, you could carry on believing the Earth moved. But then disaster struck. Kennedy and Thorndike did an experiment to prove whether their theory gave the right results. And it didn't. He still found no fringe shift. So everybody scratched their head and said, oh dear, we thought relativity would solve the problem, but we're still faced with a stationary Earth. Then a genius called Albert Einstein came along. He modified Lorentz's theory of relativity to take every aspect of reality out of it, make it a purely mathematical theory, which doesn't refer to real life at all, and now with his purely mathematical relativity, now we can breathe a sigh of relief. We can explain away all the observations that say the Earth is the center of the universe. Ah, thank you, Mr. Einstein. Now, in his theory, we have what's called the constancy of the speed of light. Now, you think that means that light always travels through space at a constant speed. No, what it means is this. The Earth is traveling through space at a speed v. Light impacted at a speed c. And the impact speed is still c. It's not c plus v. C plus v equals c. And the light catching the Earth up, it strikes with a speed of c. C plus v equals c minus v. Well, obviously, there's one solution. V equals naught. The Earth's not moving. The Earth is stationary. But Einstein says, no, this is true whatever the value of V. Really? Now, not everybody believed that. Lots of people did. They wanted to believe the Earth was stationary. But Sagnac, for example, in France, said, well, let's prove this. Let's test it. So he built a turntable. And he had a light source, and he had means of reflecting the light around clockwise and anti-clockwise. Now, his apparatus doesn't actually look like this. It was very carefully made to make the light paths exactly on top of each other. I've separated so you see what's happening. But when this is not turning, you've got light going around anti-clockwise and clockwise, and they come together, and there is a fringe shift, which is just what you'd expect. But if you start spinning this thing, now we've got one beam of light going along with the rotation, and so that is catching up the detector at a speed c plus v, and there is one going against the rotation, so that's meeting the detector at c minus v. So now we can test, does c plus v equal c minus v? No, it doesn't. You got a fringe shift. C plus v does not equal c, does not equal c minus v. Einstein's wrong. Well, Michelson, that genius we looked at earlier, now worked with another collaborator called Gale, and he built a large circuit in Chicago, and he sent a beam round clockwise and anti-clockwise, and again, he should get no fringe shift if Einstein's right. So he did it, and he got a fringe shift. C plus V does not equal C, does not equal V. Einstein wrong again. So that's a problem. If Einstein's wrong, the Earth is stationary at the center of the universe. But has the scientific establishment abandoned Einstein just because he's wrong? No. No, you find another ad hoc theory to explain away why Einstein doesn't work, but it's still true. Well, the next person on the scene is Edwin Hubble. I'm sure you've heard of Edwin Hubble. This is not the Hubble telescope. This is the telescope that Hubble worked on. And working on this telescope, he found that the smaller a galaxy, the fainter a galaxy that he observed in his telescope, and therefore presumably the further away, the more its spectrum was shifted towards the red. So this happened whatever direction you pointed his telescope. The further away, the more red shifted the spectrum. So he found circles, concentric shells of redshift centered on the Earth. So the Earth is the center of whatever's going on here. What do the redshifts mean? Well, almost everybody interpreted those redshifts as meaning the more the redshift, the faster it's moving away. So the whole universe must be expanding, and the further you get away from the Earth, the faster it's going. Hey, what? That means the Earth is the center of a great expansion. Now, nobody likes the Earth being the center of anything. Then they did observations of the distribution of mass in the universe. And to their horror, they discovered that the Earth is at the center of the densest part of the universe, and as you go away from the Earth, it gets less and less dense. Well, nobody liked that. So they applied some fiddle factors called dimming factors. And now they wanted to make this all uniform, so the Earth is just in the normal place. But they found in applying the dimming factors, all they could do was to make the Earth now in the center at the least dense part of the universe, and the further you go away from the Earth, the more dense it gets. So the Earth is still at the center of everything. Then in 1990, it was discovered that there were what are called megawalls across the universe. And the editor of Science Frontiers made this interesting statement. He said, wouldn't it be hilarious if the Earth were at the center of these concentric shells? And by the way, some measurements of the universe's rotation also seem to imply geocentrism. Wherever you look, it's all pointing to the Earth being the center. Well, there was a project put underway to measure these megawalls across the cosmos. It was called the Sloan Sky Survey. If you go to the Sloan Sky Survey website, you'll find pictures like this. And here we've got a slice looking through the universe, And here are these mega walls across the universe, and where are we? We are here. Now, if you put together all those segments and make a picture, which they don't do on the Sloan Sky Survey, they show you pictures like this, but they don't put it together. And then if you do, you get this, and here are the mega walls across the center and across the universe, and where are we? We're right here, exactly in the center. Then there are quasars. Nobody really knows what quasars are, but they come in several different spectral types, and if you plot them all out, they are all on concentric shells centered on the Earth. Y.P. Varshney, a famous astronomer, said the cosmological interpretation of the redshifts in the spectra of quasars leads to yet another paradoxical result, namely that the Earth is the center of the universe. And then 3 years ago, Blake Temple and Joel Smoller noted in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science of America, the only way we can explain dark energy is for the Earth to be the center of the universe. Then we've got the Pioneer anomaly. Here is a Pioneer being assembled in the factory before it was launched. There were several Pioneers. There were also Voyager probes. You might recognize this one. It's got that famous gold plate designed by Carl Sagan. And there were also Ulysses probes, and they're all suffering from the same problem. When they get far enough away from the Earth, you find they're not obeying the laws of science as they should do. Radio signals going out to them are bouncing back and getting back to the Earth quicker than they should be. Now, as far as I'm concerned, it's just another proof that the further away you go from the Earth, the faster the speed of light. So the reason it comes back quicker is because the speed of light is faster further out, and so it comes back quicker. And this happens in whatever direction this energy sinks, and certainly all over. Now, they don't like that idea. They say, well, there must be a force pushing straight back towards the Earth. Well, whatever the answer, whatever the solution, all of them show one thing. The Earth is the center of whatever is the problem. Now, when we come across, time and time again, evidence showing the Earth is stationary at the center of the universe, why do we find that they keep having to produce all these ad hoc theories to carry on believing that the Earth is moving around the sun? Why couldn't they simply accept all the evidence which says the Earth is stationary, it does not move? Well, I think the answer to that was given by Burgess when he said, the story of Christianity tells about a plan of salvation centered on a particular people and a particular man. As long as someone is thinking in terms of a geocentric universe, the story has a certain plausibility. As soon as astronomy changes theories, however, the whole Christian history loses the only setting within which it would make sense. With the solar system no longer the center of anything, imagining that what happens here forms the center of a universal drama becomes simply silly. And the secular humanist does not want to lend any support whatsoever to the Christian story. He would like to have the Christian story simply silly. So he's not going to be at all happy with this. As J.F. Henry pointed out, the possibility that we have a special place in the universe is depressing to the humanist and is to be absolutely avoided. Well, what really is the situation? Is it true, like the secular humanists say, that we are lost in the vastness of space like a grain of sand in the Sahara Desert, and even if there was a God, he wouldn't be able to find us? Is there actually a lot of evidence that suggests that's true? Or could it just be possible that we really are at the center of a great universal drama? And anyway, does it matter? Well, it turns out that to astronomy it matters a great deal, because all those distances the astronomers tell us about, they are all calculated on the assumption that the Earth is going around the Sun with an orbit of 300 million kilometers diameter. So when you're over on this side, you take a photograph of this star over here, and you see what stars are in the background, and then 6 months later, you're 300 million kilometers away, and you take another photograph of the same star, and you see it's moved against the background, therefore it must be light years away, vast numbers of light years away. Of course, if the Earth is not moving around the Sun, then those photographs tell you something completely different. And those distances, well, what does it tell you about the distances? It certainly doesn't tell you what the astronomers are telling us. And what these things are depends on the distance. The astronomers look at this patch of light on their photographic plate and they say, oh, well, this is 2 billion light years away, and to be that bright on this exposure, it must be a whole galaxy of millions of stars. Of course, if it's not 2 billion light years away, then you come to a completely different conclusion. So everything they are telling us depends on the idea the Earth really is going around the Sun, and if it's not, the whole of astronomy falls apart. Well, does it matter for a Christian? Well, it does. It matters very much. Because the attack on the centrality of the Earth was an attack on the reliability of the Bible. And when Charles Lyell came along with all his millions of years, he said, he was able to say, the Bible was wrong about the position of the Earth. It's also wrong about the age of the Earth. And the Christians say, oh dear, yes, well, the Bible is wrong about the Earth being the center of the universe. Maybe it's wrong about it being only a few thousand years old, oh dear. And then Charles Darwin was able to come along and say, oh well, the Bible was wrong about where the Earth is in the universe. It was wrong about how old it is. It's wrong about how the creatures got here. God didn't create them. They evolved from slime in a warm little pond. And the Christian said, oh dear, well, yes, the Bible was wrong about the position of the Earth. It was wrong about the age of the Earth. Oh dear. It looks like it was wrong about creation too. So they abandoned the truths of the Bible for the stories of the atheists. And you notice, every one of those things that they've abandoned are attacking the authority of the book of Genesis. Where do we get the position of the Earth from? Well, from what it says in the book of Genesis. Where do we get the age of the Earth? Well, by counting back the generations in the book of Genesis. Where do we get the creation of the creatures from? From the book of Genesis. And these attacks are all on the book of Genesis, which is the foundation of the faith. Because God's law stands on Genesis. God is justified in providing laws for the way you should behave because he created you. And holiness stands on God's law. Doing God's will rather than just what I'd like to do. Your will be done, not mine. Grace stands on holiness because all have sinned and fallen short of that holiness which God's law demands. And salvation, the supreme act of grace, stands at the top of this structure. Now, what has happened to the church? It has allowed its foundation to be smashed. And we look at the church today, and we see a church in a very miserable state. It's in a pathetic state. And we see all kinds of perverted gospels. You get the liberation gospel, and you get the social welfare gospel, and you get the gospel of a good self-image, and you get the prosperity gospel, and you get the emerging gospel, and all kinds of perversion. How come? Well, the church has built itself on a smashed foundation, and the doctrines of demons have seeped in all the cracks, and the church is in a pathetic state. Well, is there anything we can do about it? I believe there is, and Jesus told us what we can do about it. Jesus said, unless you become as a little child, you will not enter the kingdom of God. We need to come to God's word like a little child, coming to the instructions of his father, accepting that his father knew what he wanted to say, knew how he wanted to say it, and all we have to do is just believe, accept what he says, and do it. And if we were prepared to do that, I am convinced that we could build the church that Jesus came. Well, I think that might be a few seconds or...
Yes, let's take a minute if there's a question.
All right, 1 minute. Question.
I need to know, is it observable that the moon is coming closer to the Earth?
No, it's moving further away from the Earth.
Is it moving further away? Okay. Oh, yeah, sorry, it's moving further away. Is it observable that the rest of the universe is moving further away, if they're all also sort of orbiting around us? Surely everything should be moving further away as well.
Well, in order to be able to tell whether things are moving away, you would have to be able to measure. And the Bible guarantees that we will never be able to measure the heavens. So when these astronomers tell you with their in their great pride and arrogance, oh, this is so many thousand million light years away, the Bible guarantees that you can say one thing to them: you're wrong. If you look at Jeremiah chapter 31, the whole chapter is God saying he will never abandon the children of Israel. And in verse 37, he says, if the heavens above can be measured, or the earth beneath searched out, then I will abandon the children of Israel. He never will, so we will never be able to measure the heavens. And if the astronomers tell you they can, they don't know what they're talking about. They're working on false assumptions, and the very first one they always work on is the earth goes around the sun. And they've got lots and lots of assumptions based on guesses, based on theories, based on hypotheses, and there's one thing we can be confident of: they're wrong. So whether the universe is expanding, whether it's collapsing, we are not in a position to measure, and anyone who says he can measure and can give you an answer, he doesn't know what he's talking about, because the Bible guarantees he's wrong. Yes.
If the Earth is stationary, then does it even rotate around its axis, or is it really the sun that's rotating around, gives us the days and the long chain?
Well, the Bible doesn't give us a lot of detail about exactly what's happening, but it says the Earth hangs on nothing. Now, it's hard to picture something hanging on nothing, but we are pretty familiar with things that hang on a string, on a hook or something. And something hanging, it can't get very or far away from what it's hanging on. You know, it can maybe do a little bit of swaying, it can maybe do a little bit of turning, bit of rocking, but that's all if it's hanging on something. Now, the Earth is hanging on nothing. There could be a little bit of wobbling, a little bit of swaying here and there, but that's all.
Very much. Thank you for that. I'm sure many of you have many questions for Uncle Philip, and times such as these during tea time, please do take advantage of these times. Sit down, sit down, ask questions. The lecturers are available, and the same applies for all the lecturers. Please take advantage of questions during lunch times and tea times as well.